students, teachers, and parents alike have been dealing with big changes to what a school day looks like. It hasn't always gone smoothly, but some people in the education world see this as an opportunity to rethink the way we teach and how we expect students to learn. For one example, online learning has been a mixed bag, but it has had benefits for some students, and we've learned a lot of lessons along the way. Could virtual learning play a bigger role in the future post-COVID world? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you look forward to school going back to normal, the way things were before, or do you think there should be a new normal with some changes and lessons learned? Has this past year made you think differently about the way we educate our children? Do you think more virtual options should be on the table? Do you have a kid maybe in your own house who benefited in some ways from more online learning? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Paul Revel is professor of practice of educational policy and administration at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He's also the founding director of the Education Redesign Lab. Paul, welcome back to Central Time.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Before we dive into some specific changes and outcomes of this last year of education, is there a sense in the education world that, hey, maybe we don't have to go back to normal the way it used to be, that this unintended experiment could give us some good lessons we can learn from?
Well, I'm not sure it's an either-or proposition. I think virtually everybody in the world of education wants to go back to in-person in some way, shape, or form, whether that in-person resembles identically what we did earlier or whether it is sort of the central core of the education business but allows for us to apply some of the tools of distance learning to add to education options for our children and to compensate for some of the equity gaps that have developed, that remains to be seen. So I prefer to see it as sort of a both and proposition. We should return to in person, but we should add some of the affordances that the new technology brings to us.
Yeah, can you talk about what that might look like? Could we see more hybrid options for certain learners in the future where, yeah, they're in school some, but they're doing part of their day virtually?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility because, as you pointed out in your intro, there are a number of children and families who've liked this kind of arrangement and to be able to use home as a base from which to learn. I think more importantly, you know, the educational technology and the concept of remote learning, distance learning, enables us to break down the barriers of time and of geography and space and time that kind of lock us into the typical agrarian schedule, which is left over from, you know, a century ago around which our school system was built. So I think what we have is the possibility to personalize education a good deal more, to meet children where they are and give them what they need. So take, for example, providing after-school opportunities or summer learning opportunities. I think a fair amount of this could be done, or at least done partially, through making options available, as we've learned to do, online. So if some students come back and they've got significant learning gaps and they need more time than the typical education day involves, then there's the opportunity for us to stretch and provide instruction in hours after the traditional school day. We've known, for instance, for a long time that those who have summer learning opportunities tend to surge forward academically, and those who don't fall back. This would give us the opportunity to make those kind of summer learning options available at a reasonable price to a much larger number of students than have access to them now. So I think there are a number of possibilities here that I hope we'll explore and use some of these new federal dollars coming in to pioneer in the coming summer and in the next school year.
And that reminds me, we had, even before COVID-19, concerns in this country, in this state, about inequities among students of different backgrounds, of family, of wealth, ethnicity, and so on. Has this last year changed the way we think of that, maybe highlighted the importance of dealing with it, and maybe some methods to help deal with that?
Absolutely. I think it's been, you know, I've likened it to what we've experienced is kind of like an earthquake that's lifted a tidal wave off the ocean floor and revealed on that ocean floor profound inequities in the lives of children that get in the way of them coming to school or supplying their best effort if they get there. And I think society is much more aware of this. Issues like food, clothing, and shelter, internet access, a sense of safety, stable housing, dental care, vision care, in addition to mental health care and physical health care. So all these are critical issues, and I think they've been revealed in this crisis. And at the same time, we've had a social and racial justice crisis, and people are, I think now, significantly more aware of the inequities and the degree to which the coronavirus crisis and the closing of schools has made that crisis even worse. The gaps, whatever gaps we had before, have gotten even worse because those best able to persist and be resilient in this crisis have been those families who have the most resources, the most social and economic capital. And those who struggle most are naturally those students who are living in extreme disadvantage. Imagine if you are homeless or a foster child, or you didn't have internet access in your home, or you didn't have adequate computers or a hotspot to go to. You know, so we've had a lot of children falling significantly behind, and we're going to have to reckon with that. Most school districts have that on the top of their agenda as they think about the ways in which they're going to return to school.
Talking to Paul Revel, professor of practice of educational policy administration at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, looking at how schools have changed during the pandemic, whether there are some changes that we might learn from, some things we could do when we return to in-person or mostly in-person education consistently around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions for our guests. That's 800-642-1234. Paul, I know this last year has been stressful for a lot of students, a lot of everybody for that matter. Has this highlighted concerns about mental health problems facing kids and what schools can do to help deal with that?
Profoundly. In most states, I know in my home state of Massachusetts, the numbers of cases where students and their families have been asking for mental health services have skyrocketed far beyond the capacity of our mental health systems, let alone our school systems, to meet those needs. Now, this was a problem prior to the pandemic. It was a very common problem. As you travel around the country and talk to superintendents, they'd say, I've got a number of children coming into school with significant mental health issues, and I just don't have the staff to deal with them. But if I don't deal with them, it creates all kinds of problems in the lives of those children and in the lives of their classmates and teachers. So this is, again, a crisis beforehand, but now one that's even more acute, particularly as students encounter mental health problems just by virtue of being home, being isolated, having their relationships with friends and teachers cut off and fractured. So it's compounding and intensifying a number of problems, creating anxiety in students about going out in public, creating depression because they can't connect or don't have any kinds of distractions or recreation in their lives. So one of the primary reasons, for example, in Massachusetts, our commissioner of education has called students back into school is to provide them with some of the kinds of supports that are needed and some of the kind of preventative mechanisms that are in place when you have kids in school that aren't there when school is closed. That still won't solve the larger problem, which is we've got to do a better job in this society of meeting young people's mental health needs, or we can't possibly hope that schools will be successful with them if they're struggling with issues. It's no different than having significant dental issues or vision issues or health issues. If we don't treat those as basic, then you can't expect a student to concentrate or learn. And so we're going to have to stand up and address that. Schools being open is one step in the right direction. But I was glad to see that the new bill coming out of Congress to provide relief specifically provides money to school systems to hire social workers and counselors and people of this nature to help with some of these issues.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Allison is with us in Appleton. Allison, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. What I just wanted to mention was my son has autism, and what I experienced was having him home and watching him in the virtual classroom, I was able to learn more about his learning style and understand how he operates, and then I was able to help him more now knowing, you know, he does participate a lot in class, or he's very emotional. And so while he was home, we were able to work on those things, which I think then in turn prepared him better for when he was able to get back into the classroom now.
Allison, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Paul, what do you think? I'm guessing Allison is not the only one who had a similar experience.
No, I think a lot of parents have found out it enables them to better understand what's going on in school and how they can be supportive of it by having this kind of connection. So a couple of things. One, you know, schools and families need to be more tightly connected now than they ever were before. We used to give a lot of lip service in education to the idea of family involvement, family engagement, but it really was a secondary or ancillary thought. And in many of our school systems, we spent very little time actually forming partnerships with parents. So I think we need to work harder on partnerships with parents. And secondly, goes to the point where we started, really, with this kind of technology, there's certain advantages for some kinds of students to get the supports and help that they need, which I think further underlines what I was calling for more generally, is that we need a more personalized, customized approach to education, where we meet children where they are, we recognize their differences, and we meet them where they are and give them what they need, instead of having a school system that basically is a factory model. We teach to the average, we batch process, mass produce education. Instead, we ought to be more like a case management medical model, where we don't give everybody who walks in the hospital the same treatment, the same length of stay. We say, where are you? What are your needs? What works best for you? And that's what we're going to get you. That's what we're going to prescribe for you. I think we need to begin to move that way in education as well.
We're picking up our conversation with Paul Revel, professor of practice of educational policy and administration at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, founding director of the Education Redesign Lab. We're talking about how education might change in the post-COVID era. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions and your experiences as a teacher or school staff member, a parent, or a student yourself. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Barry joins us next in Madison. Barry, hello.
Good afternoon, Professor. Hello?
Yep, go ahead, Barry.
Hello?
Oop, are you still there, Barry?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay, go ahead. Yep, we hear you loud and clear. What did you want to bring up?
Okay. well, I've been in education, and I love what I'm hearing here from the professor. And I would like to kind of point out, well, I'm 74 years old. So I'm in the baby boom generation, you know, we're the first that really went on to college in a big way. And, you know, we have been instrumental in where our economy has evolved to. Now, if you go back to when I was a kid, there were millions and millions and millions of people growing up on farms, growing up in families with manufacturing. And so what I'm saying is there was a tremendous amount of experiential hands-on learning. And we have all but lost that. Our technical programs in high schools, for the most part across the country, are totally inadequate. And yet, in the past, we've had all of these great people come up with all kinds of skills, became engineers, et cetera, and built the economy. Well, but now our education system is so focused on simply drill.
Gotcha. Barry, thanks a lot for the call. I want to throw this to Paul. So Barry, looking for, it sounds like, more hands-on experiential learning, less drill and memorization.
Yeah, well, I don't know many people who are prescribing memorization as a good approach these days, but the larger point that Barry makes is a good one. The economy's changed completely. Those manufacturing jobs and agricultural jobs that used to account for a large percentage of our families have in many instances disappeared. The requirements for 21st century high skill, high knowledge employment have increased dramatically. And we need to adjust our education systems to those realities. Now, around the country, there are some outstanding systems of career technical education, you know, what we formerly call vocational schools. And then there's some instances, and Barry seemed to be pointing to some of these, of those that, you know, vocational technical schools that have been sort of locked in former conceptions of what the work is and where employees were needed, and not up to date and not providing students the skills and knowledge they need to be viable in today's economy. I think in this crisis that we've just had, where teachers have had to reinvent curriculum in a lot of ways, the notion of doing more project-based learning, the notion of using the community, and that includes employers, as the source of problems that students come to solve and figure out how to apply skill and knowledge to some of the most pressing problems we have in our neighborhoods, in our cities, in our states, and in our nation. I think that's the way to go. I think we're going to see a lot more applied learning and project-based learning. And some of that will have grown directly out of our experience here in the pandemic, where teachers can't simply get online and lecture for an hour or use the traditional ways and means of educating. They've got to use the broader community and adults in the community as part of the education ecosystem. So I hope we'll see a good deal more of, you know, school to career kinds of pathways that get set up for our young people, because it's very much needed. I mean, we need to prepare young people to play a meaningful role in a 21st century economy, not only for them personally, so that they can make an income and be viable and have a family if they choose to do so, but also so they provide the ingredients for a growing economy in this country. That's what we very much need, and we've got to adjust our education systems accordingly.
Barry, thanks for the call. We got an email from Diana who says, as a sixth grade science teacher, I think that idea, more individualized education, is a great idea. However, I see 100 kids a day. How is that possible? Paul, what do you think?
That's a great question, Diana, and it points out the dilemma of a lot of teachers, that how do we personalize if we're working with those kinds of ratios? So, I mean, I think we need to rethink the roles. We need to rethink the ratios of students to teachers. We need to, for example, I think of our middle schools, and maybe Diana's in a middle school, you know, where we have students moving through, you know, blocks of 45 minutes each all day long, but not really connecting with any individual teacher. We have students in our middle schools and high schools going through a whole year of schooling without really being known or understood or responded to by any adult, because the adults are dealing with not just 100, but in many cases, 150 or close to 200 students a week. And it's just too many students to reckon with on a personal basis. So we're going to have to rethink and rebuild our schools in ways that foster relationships that make for deeper engagement and understanding between teachers and students. One example for that you could apply easily enough and in middle schools and high schools is having something they call an advisory, where students and teachers gather for a 45-minute period each day, which in effect becomes a guidance period, where a cohort of students comes together with a teacher who, in effect, is their guidance counselor. We're running guidance ratios of 1 to 3 or 4 or 500 these days. So students effectively don't get any guidance, or they don't get sufficient guidance. So, you know, you build that into part of the school day and make that part of a teacher's job description, and not just to get to know the student, but to get to know each student's family. I'd like to see teachers doing home visits with all their students, getting to know the families and so on and so forth. So I think strengthening and building relationships is the only way to get to personalization. But we've got to restructure education in order to get there.
Time for one more caller. Brian is with us in Madison. Brian, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Brian?
I just wanted to talk about the last issue that the email person just talked about with your guest comparing physician to patient and students and teachers making more connections. I think it's a great idea and great philosophy, but very difficult to put into play, considering, you know, I'd see 120 students every year, and individualizing every single student's curriculum to their needs would be ideal. It's a fantastic idea, but very difficult, hard to handle.
Brian, thanks a lot for that call. Paul, is this a case where we can do this by reshuffling resources we have, or do we need more resources to do that kind of thing you're talking about, more individualized work? In just our last minute or so.
Okay, Rob, I think it's a little bit of both, frankly. I mean, I do think it can't be on the teachers to figure this out. I mean, I think education policymakers and administrators would have to restructure the school day, restructure the school year, redefine what we mean by the responsibilities for a teacher, for a guidance counselor, for administrators within a building. I think you'll need some increased investment to attend to the variety of needs that are likely to come up when you start really focusing individually on what students need inside and out of school. But I think it's highly possible to do it. And I think we've got a number of schools around the country that are working on it.
Thanks for that call. And Paul, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Rob, my pleasure. Thanks for having me with you.
That's Paul Revel, professor of the practice of educational policy and administration at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, founding director there of the Education Redesign Lab. He joined us today to talk about how the pandemic is reshaping education and maybe some lessons we can take out on the other side.